Stealth motorbikes at dawn. We arrived back at the end of July by night. The airport car park was still hot, with a heady mix of smells combining aviation fuel with the tamarisk and bougainvillea. The car hire security worked. The usual whispered instruction only days before. The keys will be under the driver's floor mat. The car unlocked. Ring the day before and I'll give you the colour and number of the plate. You don't want to drive the wrong car here. The whole car park was probably filled with unlocked cars or with the keys under the driver's mat. We were back in Crete and it was great to be here. Minutes later, as we drove towards the sunrise, we encountered our first hazard, a stealth motorcyclist. Hunched over his handlebars and in the middle of our side of the road, no apparent rear lights and a barely discernible dim glow in the front. The road is windy and the traditional method of overtaking is to tailgate until the vehicle in front panics and pulls over to drive onto the hard shoulder, trusting there are no parked cars, pedestrians, fruit stalls or large rocks, all of which we've encountered at one time or another when becoming forcibly engaged in such manoeuvres. He was travelling at 70 kilometres an hour plus, but the road was pretty quiet. Was it better to have him behind me or in front? Of course, if I rear-ended him, his obvious defence would be that he had lights before I drove into him. Cunning or what? Was he drunk, mad or both? Eventually, we got past him and spent the next few miles worrying about him overtaking under cover of darkness until we concluded he'd turned or fallen off. We drove as the sun rose, like a Texan road movie, with mountains and scree slopes slipping past, eventually stopping in Ayas for an essential 6 o'clock coffee and a cheese pie in a street-side cafe. The temperature was in the high 20s and rising rapidly. It was hard to believe, but as we drove towards the town and Maria's apartment that we stayed in, that we now owned a house on this island. We'd booked a night flight and even after the coffee we were still sleepy. Despite the excitement, we would try and sleep. It was not a success, so around an hour and a half later, we drove up the hill to the old village and our house. Parking above the town, behind the larger of the churches, we walked through the narrow alleyways of the village. The morning was already hot, with deep shadows cast across the stone walkways, cats running at the side of our feet. We saw no one and turned the last corner before our house and down into our tiny street. The house was as we'd left it some 3 months before, with two notable exceptions. The climbing vines up the wall were even higher, and they made the narrow alley even greener than before. Secondly, there was a small mountain of black plastic sacks stacked against the front wall and virtually blocking the end of the alley. This was also blocking access to the small courtyard for our neighbour. Not a good start. We went in, well, half the hay had been bagged up, but there was still a lot in there, plus the large collection of pointy sticks and the much coveted clay urn. So good and bad news. We clambered over the debris and up the wooden staircase, through the hatch to admire the view from upstairs. Unfortunately, upstairs looked the same as it had at the last visit. A large wooden crate draped with sacks, several washing lines with more sacks, and some mysterious plastic bottles tied to the line. Three large oil drums, one with a cover, two square tins, the urn and a large bowl completed the treasury. Oh, and a small sprinkling of hay, as if we didn't already have enough of this downstairs. All of it was made more visible as the wooden shutters that had covered the windows had been thrown open by whoever had started to clear the house. The local. We needed to sit down and consider the position. Luckily, we had brought a celebratory bottle of sparkling wine and some grapes. We made the two square feta tins marginally more comfortable with sackcloth upholstery and sat precariously in the larger of the two windows, where we'd optimistically discussed adding a small balcony with the architect. From here, if we risk our necks by leaning out, we had a spectacular view of the causeway and the distant mountains across the lagoon. The view was slightly soured by the 20 or 30 or so plastic sacks rather more immediately in our view. The wine and the grapes softened the prospect as we toasted our new little home. But what would we need to do about the newly acquired contents and what was happening about them? We needed to find out, and as potential new village residents, we went to the place that all villagers go to find things out, the Café Neon. Maria's was the only one we'd visited before, and although hardly regulars, we felt sure of a warm welcome, and we were not disappointed. We had pre-prepared a short speech in Greek to explain that we had bought a small house in Panamalunda, and once renovated would be more frequent visitors. Maria seemed a little foxed by this, and showing the photo didn't clear things up. In fact, she didn't seem to recognise the house at all, which was less than 100 yards away. Disappointed, we settled down to our drinks, and she plied us with mezzas, three separate tiny courses, a salad of feta cheese, cucumber and tomatoes, watermelon pieces, and finally small fresh figs, €4 to include two beers. Yes, this was our local, even if Maria had yet to realise it. We would return with help. After a sleep, we hit town for sundowners and dinner, also to update friends on our progress since the visit in May. We first encountered Stelios and Kostos outside his shop, and two doors down from the jeweller's where Kostos delicately practiced his art of jewellery making. This seems quite plausible on first meeting him, a delicate, lively man with bright eyes, until you learn more about his lifestyle, which is more centred on motorbikes, heavy metal music, and allegedly shooting anything that moves. Our recent acquisition of the Pano house was met with approval, and even the threat of Kostos becoming a neighbour at some indeterminate point in the future, when he thinks he might live nearer the hills. It's handier for hunting, he explained. We mentioned the unmoved hay, and there was some sympathy and an immediate offer of marksmanship to shoot anything that may lurk within. Cats, rats, mice, the trouble with you English is that you feed animals. Then you have hundreds. Shooting them's the answer. Let me know if there's anything you want shooting. Could be handy if there were any future disputes with neighbours or builders, although come to think of it, they may be armed to the teeth as well. Best not to start this arms race. We thanked them, hoping the hired gun offer was just in jest, and went for a drink. More advice this time from George's Danish girlfriend. Don't come here all the time like some others unless you get a job. You'll be bored. We explained it was only a very small house. It could only be a holiday home. Oh, that was all right then. There was then mention that they also may become neighbours. George owns some land near Pano. Maybe they would build a house up there. It's very quiet, tranquil even. Toasts were made to that, drinks on the house, see you later for a nightcap, or later in the week if too tired, all offers of payment were waved aside. We may be neighbours, hopefully not sheltering together from the trigger-happy Kostos and his one-man vermin extermination squad, shattering the current tranquility of the village. Time to eat. The first restaurant we came to was the one we knew well, where George, looking rather racy in an orange silk shirt, greeted us with enthusiasm and a not altogether welcome patting of my stomach, accompanied by the dubious compliment of, still sexy. Was gay pride returning to Greece? Reassuringly, his more refined wife also welcomed us for what was the first of our many enjoyable meals that week. As we paid the bill some 2 hours later, we resisted the temptation. How about another carafe for the road on the house? These people know an awful lot about hospitality. Nevertheless, we declined and crawled up the hill to bed. We faced a busy week. There was a late start the next day after yesterday's travel and excitement. A good job we'd resisted the carafe for the road. Stephanie walked down to the baker's for some fresh bread, the English holiday cliche, but always a good start to the day. Breakfast on the balcony, bread and olive paste, cheese and fruit. Healthy. Maria said we could meet her in the square. She would drive down the hill, then have the car there to collect shopping later. We drove down the hill, always exciting as the roads down are single file only, and the additional hazards of cats, ladies sitting on roadside benches, as well as oncoming cars or motorbikes. We arrived in the square without incident and realised the arrangements with Maria had been rather imprecise. In the square, in 10 minutes. We hung around near the harbour, which I defined as the square, and at least there was something to watch. Eventually, Maria appeared. I had trouble parking, and then started talking. We guessed as much. That was all part of the charm of the place. It was impossible for us to pass through the town without a couple of conversations. For locals, whole days could drift by. We all got in the hire car and headed up the hill to Pano, Maria adding an element of unnecessary drama to the journey by refusing to wear a seatbelt and carrying out her own elaborate hand signals in the front to help punctuate the conversation. "Park here, it's nearer," assisted by vigorous hand signals, leaving me with only light bruising. We parked and were instructed by Maria how we must leave the car locked with the windows half open. For years we'd given up locking our hire cars as no one else seemed to, and were quite happy to leave shopping in it. A pleasant change, and our Greek friends found it hard to believe it was recommended to lock your car, even in a filling station in Britain, when you went to pay. Although they conceded it would be the same in Athens. Progress through the village was slower with Maria. The people we had exchanged a calamera or yaz or just smile were the opportunity for longer and animated conversations with Maria, including pointing towards us as part of the conversation. I was hoping it wasn't all Greek for "these are the mugs who paid for Dimitri's new BMW by buying his donkey shelter." Every time we came up here, we were charmed by the winding, narrow alleyways, the kaleidoscope of colours on the walls of the little houses, the noises and smells. We turned down the last alley. The black sacks had multiplied, twice as many as yesterday. We clambered past them, both chatting to Maria. "It's very small, but it's what we want, and it's dry, and we'll be getting more windows to get more light in, and the architect says it's solid, and he can really make something of it, and Maria looked around and, to our relief, agrees, "Yes, it's a good house, a good position. You'll be able to make something of this. Let's see upstairs." With the additional hay clearance that had taken place downstairs, the upstairs was now much more chaotic than the ground floor. "See, there is this big urn and an earthenware bowl and a niche over there. You can get sea views from the windows, and this big one would be the door to the balcony if we get the building permit." We were like garrulous children. We desperately wanted her to like it. The same as months earlier, even before we'd known the price or made an offer, we were already feeling unrealistically possessive, and we'd shown the house to friends Dave and Miranda. In the conversation, we had ignored the other fittings the house came with: the 3 full-size oil drums, the 2 large wooden boxes, the old washing lines with their interesting collection of dusty sacks pegged to them, as well as the superb collection of hand-carved pointy sticks. Going outside, it was difficult to convince Maria that the small courtyard down the alley and next to our house was not ours, but instead belonged to next door. It admittedly seemed strange in that our house was between the courtyard and the neighbour's house, but we explained that the lawyer had completed the land searches, etc., and confirmed that the little house came without outside space. So apart from the shared common way of the alleyway in front, the only opportunity for outside space was a balcony and a roof terrace. These were both to be subject to building permits. I could see that Maria was not entirely convinced. We left the house, suggesting a drink at the nearest Cafe Neon, coincidentally owned by another Maria. Maria speaks to Maria. En route, we encountered a smiling elderly lady who Maria engaged in conversation with, which went on for ages, with much pointing at the little house and at us. I'm not sure how much of the conversation was diplomatically edited for us, but the upshot was that Maria, on the basis of this conversation with a neighbour, now accepted that the small courtyard belonged to our neighbour, from what we could see, currently the only other occupied house in the street, with the other two looking even more derelict than our own. Obviously, that is the answer: move into the street first and buy any spare areas. It appears, as Maria explained later, that the next door neighbours bought their house from the same family who owned our house, as well as the small courtyard. So the mystery was solved. This was explained over drinks at Maria's Cafe Neon, where Maria 1 cleared up any confusion that Maria 2 may have suffered as a result of our experiments in the Greek language. We think Maria 2 now understood we were to become neighbours. More messes were brought out, so that seemed okay. Maria 1 was anxious that we came with her to meet an English family who'd restored a house nearby. So we finished our drinks but could not leave, as unbeknown to us, in one of the verbal exchanges in rapid Greek, Maria 2 had entrusted the bar to Maria 1. No matter that we were the only customers, we couldn't leave until she returned. This happened fairly soon. The urgent horn hooting we'd noticed earlier had signalled the arrival of the bread van in the village, and Maria had now returned armed with bags of rolls and loaves. Perhaps a rush of the Greek equivalent of a ploughman's lunches were predicted. We paid and left, promising to return soon. Well, it would be our local, and I had never been asked to look after a pub in Sussex in the 20 years I'd lived there. In retrospect, I realised Maria was only looking out for our interests as strangers in a foreign land. I suppose it was a good thing the neighbour agreed with our lawyer, estate agent and Greek land registry. We then called in to see some friends of Maria's who renovated a larger house not 100 yards from the Cafenean. Did they know our little house? No, they couldn't place it. The village is a real rabbit warren, but very friendly. They showed us around their house, which looked very comfortable and finished, a complete lack of hay. Wonder if they needed any. They are local. I could deliver. On their terrace was also a lady who ran one of the nearby restaurants, who was having a drink with their daughter. We exchanged hellos. Small world, you're buying. Good, we'll see more of you at the restaurant. It was always busy there, and we realised this was the first time we'd ever seen her sitting down. On the way back to town, Maria recounted some more of the conversation with the lady in black. Yes, the neighbour's house and ours had been owned by the same family, and indeed ours had in recent times been used for stabling and storage, though the lady was new to the village and could only talk about the last 20 years. The owner is building a bar on the road south out of town, and she has two sons, but the house is not being cleared by them. She has two Albanians doing this. She owned the house together with her brother, the one with the moustache, and her aunt. A wealth of information had been acquired. Albanians were playing a part in my life for the first time, even though I'd not met them. We'd also been involved in a transaction with someone whose main claim to fame was his moustache. In the land of moustaches, we would see this guy coming. I have fantasies of following him on a motorbike, moustache billowing in the slipstream, perhaps obscuring his rear light and explaining a mystery earlier in the week. The journey back to town was not without event. Maria suddenly exclaimed, "There's a van!" I braked hard and nearly sent her through the windscreen as she still resisted the temptations of the seatbelt. I assumed she spotted a hazard on the road ahead, but she was merely updating us on the retail facilities available in the village and explaining where Maria too had obtained her bags of bread. Back in town, we ate a leisurely lunch of local traditional fare, including horta, the local dish, which is a mixture of boiled greens, almost like spinach, with small asparagus-type plants in it. I speculated whether the hay had been horta when it was first stored, and if the Albanians had moved more swiftly, they could have pioneered the Med's fast-food veggie horta business. An opportunity missed, maybe.